This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome in. It's a big Tuesday edition of Sports Daily. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester, Max Power producing for us here on the program today, and we have a big show for you on a Tuesday. We'll get to our regular Tuesday business. Our Royals insider, our chief insider, they both join the program today. Royals, Mike Gillespie, it's perfect timing because we get a postmortem on a Monday. So we'll have Mike Gillespie help us go through some of what J.J. Piccolo and Matt Quattraro had to say. We'll get into that. We'll get into some Chiefs football, looking ahead to a Super Bowl rematch, one of the big games on the NFL schedule with Dan Israel. He is coming up in just a little bit as well, top of the next hour. We have some breaking news in the NFL as Jerry Jones has gone nuclear and is on a heater on local radio in Dallas, one of his favorite things to do. So we've got Max pulling some of that audio, and trust me, you'll want to hear it. If you're a Cowboys fan or a Cowboys hater, it is entertaining. So we'll have that for you coming up a little later in this hour as well. And then, you know, it's October 15th. I think the Royals distracted us a little bit from the fact that college basketball is right around the corner. We had AAC preseason rankings on Friday. Didn't have a chance to get to those, so we can get to that today. And then we'll get into the AP Top 25 released yesterday. And yes, KU is at the top. I don't think that was even the most interesting thing for us around here. So we'll get into that as well as we make our way through the show today. We'll give you some Wichita Thunder hockey tickets today. We'll give you some HTO today. And we have all kinds of good stuff for you. You can get in touch with the program on the IHOP hotline. It's brought to you by IHOP. Celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP house faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. That number is 869-1240. You can watch us and leave your comments, of course, on 12 News Connected, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. And you can leave us voice messages through the Odyssey app. If you're listening there, you can push the little microphone and leave us a message that way. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Good to see you today. We've got obviously a lot to get to on the show. It's a busy day. It's kind of our Kansas City day, at least that's the way it's been, talking Royals, talking Chiefs with our insiders on Tuesdays. So looking forward to talking to Mike Gillespie, especially about what J.J. Piccolo and Matt Quatrero talked about yesterday. Some good insight on what probably will be their offseason plans. Looking forward to talking about that. You mentioned college basketball. There's just, so much going on. Looking forward to jumping right in today.
It's so much going on. And a Monday night football game last night with Buffalo and the Jets that, we've got what a strange game, Tommy, it was, as it was ugly. It was sloppy. It was windy. We had missed kicks. And I really thought that, the Jets probably showed us with the coaching change that they may actually be able to climb back into this thing. Of course, their record's not good now, but I thought offensively that was probably the best that they looked all year long. Aaron Rodgers, almost 300 yards. He had the interception that hurt him late. They were feeding Breece Hall. Look what happens when you feed Breece Hall. He had 23 total touches and 170 yards to show for it. If Buffalo didn't gain as many yards, it was an ugly game. There's no doubt about that. It was just gross, right? It was it was not pretty to watch, but it was prettier to watch, I guess, from the Jets' perspective than we've seen, at least offensively. They looked like a better offense. They looked like it was an offense that could hang. A couple of missed field goals, that really hurt them, obviously. Buffalo wins the game, probably didn't look as good as I thought they would. They were efficient. They didn't have their running back, James Cook, and they still were able to move the ball around and do the things that they needed to do. But we'll see. I'm seeing headlines this morning about, the Jets being the most disappointing team in football and all of these things. And I think that's a bit of a stretch, Tommy, but it was a strange night because that was, to me, the best the Jets offense was. Really ugly and disappointing game for the Jets.
It really was. And that's unfortunate. And, because going into this game, I know that things haven't gone the way that the Jets have wanted it to go throughout the course of this season. I mean, that's stating the obvious there. But I really thought that coming off of what happened with Robert Saleh, that might galvanize the team a little bit. And then I remembered, then I realized, oh yeah, they've got Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, and he's not the galvanizing type. Like, let's just call it for what it is. Aaron Rodgers is a lone wolf. Aaron Rodgers is the kind of guy who's going to go out there, and he's going to try to do everything on his own. He's going to basically, he is the epitome of, in his mind, if you want something done right, go and do it yourself. But then when it doesn't go right, he's going to blame everybody else. Like, that's just kind of what the MO has been for Aaron Rodgers. So, I had forgotten about that part of it. I thought, okay, well, Robert Saleh's out. Clearly there was some disconnect there. And moving forward, that might actually bring the team together. And then, oh, yeah, wait, it's Aaron Rodgers. And that's not really the way that things go.
Yeah, this game could have been a disaster, right? It could have been an absolute disaster. But I don't think that it was. And yeah, they didn't win, and it was sloppy and ugly, and they missed field goals. And as Rodgers mentioned, they were terrible in the red zone. He had that interception that was a tough one. They made too many mistakes, the penalties, but he kind of defended his guys in the penalties after the game. But I mean, at the base level, for me, when I watched that game, I was like, oh, this is the offense we thought they could have with Aaron Rodgers. Right? It was efficient. It was moving the ball. The Bills aren't a bad defense. They could run the ball. They actually opened things up in the pass game. I would tell you this. I don't know if they'll be able to overcome the 2-4 start, but I do think that was the best by far we've seen out of this offense. And if they can figure out whatever's been going sideways on their defense, and they did lose Robert Saleh, and he's a defense guy, I think that they can still be the best version of themselves before this season is over. I don't know if they'll have enough room to eventually get into the postseason, but if they play offense like that and not like what we've seen out of the last 3 years, they've got a shot to at least reach the postseason. That was just look at it. They didn't mess around at running back. They fed their best player the ball. Breece Hall touched the ball a ton. Like, all of it was, it was just like, if you're a Jets fan, you're like, okay, finally. You're also insanely frustrated that it was ugly and sloppy, sure, like it was. But at least you have this moment of like, okay, this is what the offense could look like if it's doing what it's supposed to do.
And you know, the best version of that offense is probably, more than likely, Aaron Rodgers is going to throw a couple touchdowns, and he's going to throw a pick or multiple picks. And I know that, you know, the game was sealed last night on an INT right before the 2-minute warning that I don't know if you saw after the game, Rodgers threw Mike Williams under the bus and basically just said that Mike Williams ran the wrong route, and that's why the interception happened. Yeah. There's probably some truth to that, because Mike Williams, I watched the play. I've watched it multiple times. Yeah, there's probably some truth to the fact that that wasn't the best route ever ran. That ball was way underthrown. And so I think both things can be true. There really wasn't any kind of acknowledgement on Rodgers' part that he threw that ball, you know, and underthrown. Like, that's part of it, right?
Sorry, breaking news. As you bring up Mike Williams, this is really hilarious timing. Apparently, Devontae Adams is headed to the Jets, according to the NFL Network. The Raiders and the Jets are working on a trade, okay, like right now.
I mean, that's
right,
not shocking. Second. Not shocking,
no,
for sure.
No, but that's, I guess it lends itself. Yeah, Mike Williams is in Aaron Rodgers' doghouse, and that's not going to work. I mean, that's just not. Like, Mike Williams had, he had a drop that was really bad. He had that play that was really bad. Like, that's, you're done. He's done with you, because Alan Lazard is still there, and they don't, you know, Garrett Wilson. Rodgers obviously likes Garrett Wilson. But Devontae Adams, okay, so let's reset it then. We've seen now, post Nathaniel Hackett, what the offense can look like. And again, I don't misunderstand. That was such a sloppy, ugly game from the Jets offensively, but it was so much better than anything we've seen from them in the last 3 years. Now you add Devontae Adams to that. And for the base fact that, you know, he and Aaron Rodgers work well together, I'm going to tell you, like, that's going to, the Jets may look back at this and say, God, do you remember that game against the Bills where we really should have beat them and it was so sloppy? Because if they don't make it, I would tell you this, by week, you know, 14, 15, I bet you this offense is humming if it's healthy. Like, they're going to look really good offensively by the end of this season. I just don't know if it's going to be enough now. And maybe it will, but if they can get Devontae Adams in there, and I guess it all comes down, well, it comes down to two things. Play calling, obviously, has been atrocious, and that was much better last night. Rodgers did not look bad. Rodgers looked pretty good to me, and he got crushed and was hopping. And there were times where I was like, he ain't getting up, and he kept getting up and he kept firing it in there. But I also thought that was the best, just like physically, that he looked this year too.
I mean, anybody that knows me knows that I'm not an Aaron Rodgers fan, and I don't like his personality. I don't like the way that he carries himself. I don't like any of that. You know, so, but it's pretty clear that after what happened last night, what's happened this season, that he probably hopped on the phone and said, all right, we've got to do something. Like, I need Devontae Adams here, and I need him here yesterday. Adam Schefter, by the way, is reporting that it's a conditional third-round pick that will be headed back to Vegas that could turn into a second. That's interesting. That's an interesting value to me.
I think it's a good trade.
I mean, it's a fine trade for sure. Yeah. I think that there are probably a decent amount of teams that probably could have given that up to get Devontae Adams in their clubhouse. But ultimately, it's Rodgers wants his friend. And Rodgers has always wanted his friends. That's the way. I mean, he's going to be the most comfortable and the most confident with guys that are around him that he knows and that they like him. They trust him. It's really not worked well with him in the past. You know, look at how it's gone so far with the Jets when he's been surrounded by players that he doesn't have a level of comfortability with. So this makes a lot of sense on multiple levels.
And that goes back to the Packers, too. Like, if he didn't trust guys, it just didn't happen. And
yeah,
this will be interesting. I think if you're, you know, us, for us here, like, this is going to, I think, probably open the floodgates for Breece Hall. So that's good news. I love that trade for that reason. For the first time in his NFL career now, and we saw this last night, teams will not sell out to stop him. And I just sit here and think, watch what he can do now. Garrett Wilson's one of my favorite young players in the league. I don't know what this does to him, but probably helps him. It probably helps everybody. It's a no-brainer for the Jets. But now, I wonder, like, okay, is it too late? The good news for them is the Dolphins are still banged up. I would tell you this, Tommy, and this, we may disagree on this, and we're spending more time on this than I wanted to, but obviously we have this breaking news to it. I would take the Jets over the Dolphins right now for the rest of the season. I think the Jets are a better team.
I would too. I mean, the Jets at least have a starting quarterback.
Well, that's assuming Tua's right? back, because Tua may be back. That's assuming Tua's back. I would take the Jets over the Dolphins right now.
I think it'd be pretty close if Tua is able to come back. With Tua not there, it's the Jets for sure.
It's not, but 100%. Assuming he could, because I think they have the same record. Assuming he comes back, I mean, like, and he's back right away and played, I would take the Jets there. It's going to be interesting, man. If they can figure out how to play defense again, remember, this is one of the better defenses. I don't know if you can plug and play Devontae Adams. You can at least plug and play him on deep balls, on go get him balls, right? I mean,
I think the Raiders probably win this trade, and it's not even about the Jets. I mean, it's going to be good for Rodgers to have his buddy there, yeah. right? It's good for Devontae Adams to be out of Vegas. He didn't want to be there anyway. I mean, so like all of that's good. I think the big winner, honestly, it's the Raiders. They get a third round pick. If Adams does well, it can become a second round pick. And by the way, they're not paying any of Devontae Adams' salary moving forward. The Jets are assuming the balance in full.
Go.
In
yeah,
full.
That's for sure good.
So that's 1,000% good for the Raiders.
It was not a good decision to bring him in initially. I would say that. Not a bad one, not an awful one, since they're not on the hook for the money, but not a good one because they gave up draft capital to get him. They get a little of that back, and they wash their hands of a situation that clearly wasn't working. So it's a no-brainer on their end, and it's a no-brainer on the Jets' end too, because the Jets have to be all in. That's why they fired Robert Saleh. That's why they brought in Aaron Rodgers. But they've done everything they've done, so why wouldn't you do this? Makes total sense. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Great golf, great restaurant this week, featuring a chef special of penne pasta with mussels, garlic wine sauce, shallots, parsley, and Parmesan cheese. Get in there. Check it out. Check out the facilities. Tommy and I, both members out there, we both love it. Our families love it. All kinds of different packages that you can try. It is probably different than what you're thinking if you've never thought about it. We appreciate their support of the show. Give them a call. Tell them we sent you. When we come back, another big NFL story this morning, and we haven't even gotten to the things we had on the schedule yet because of a couple breaking news stories. The other breaking news story, a little self-inflicted, Jerry Jones, he's cranky. He gets mad at some of our sister station, I believe, in Dallas's host there for asking him hard questions. Well, we've got the audio for you. And I know Cowboys haters love to just pile on, so we'll give you that opportunity. What Jerry Jones said that has everybody talking here in the last 30 minutes or so. We'll have that for you next. Don't forget Mike Gillespie, our Royals insider, in for the post-mortem the Royals hosted yesterday. We have Dan Israel in to begin to look ahead at what should be one of the bigger NFL games. NFL schedule this week is loaded, by the way. One of the big games, Chiefs-Niners, a Super Bowl rematch. We'll have it all for you. It's Sports Daily. It's all Brockton Caster. We're coming right back.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Jake Albrecht and Tommy Caster here. On your way into work and want to keep listening to us even after you park the car, you can do it with the Odyssey app and Odyssey.com. Just download the app, visit Odyssey.com, search for KFH. Download the Odyssey app today to get started. So we've got all kinds of breaking news coming at us here early in the show that we're trying to navigate. We will get into Royals talk in our next segment with Mike Gillespie, our Royals insider. We will get into Chiefs talk at the top of the next hour with our insider, Dan Israel. And we will get into college basketball talk in the next hour as we get a big day of news and things happening across the college basketball world on Monday and on Friday that we haven't gotten to either. But first, always entertaining, Jerry Jones gets on local radio there in Dallas and just has sort of spilled the beans over the years. Very yuck with some of the folks there. And sometimes they get on him and sometimes they don't. And Cowboys fans are at their wit's end right now. And I guess it's all bubbled up because Jerry didn't have a very happy birthday as the Cowboys were embarrassed this weekend. I think some Cowboy fans, like me, have told you this was coming all along. There's absolutely nothing that didn't foreshadow this exact thing happening this season, and it's happening, and they just paid Dak a bunch of money, and they haven't made any changes. They didn't do anything to the roster, and Jerry's sick of hearing about it. So, Tommy, set this up. Where is this coming from, and what exactly do we have in the can here?
Yeah, so this was from less than an hour ago from one of our sister stations in Dallas with Odyssey, 105.3 The Fan. In Dallas, Jerry goes on, does weekly radio interviews on The Fan in Dallas. And like you mentioned, a lot of times it's usually, you know, pretty cordial and they're talking and laughing and, you know, doing a bunch of different, you know, stuff. But clearly the hosts in Dallas and I'm guessing the entire DFW Metro not in a laughing mood after what happened on Sunday with the Cowboys. And really this question was posed more about the lack of changes in the offseason, as you alluded to. That's kind of where everything went off the rails in this interview with Jerry Jones. And I could try to describe it. We should just have Max play it because it's pretty good stuff.
This is not your job. Your job isn't to let me go over all the reasons that I did something and I'm sorry that I did it. That's not your job.
Well, my job is to ask why.
Get a job, or I'll get another. I'll get somebody else to ask these questions, man.
Jerry, we're trying to figure out why the team is.
I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. You're not going to figure out what the team is doing right or wrong. If you are, or any 5 or 10 like you, you need to come to this meeting I'm going to today. There are 32 teams here. You're geniuses.
Jerry,
y'all really think you're going to sit here with a microphone and tell me all of the things that I've done wrong and without going over the rights?
That is literally his job.
That's why we do what we do.
Just like it is your job to do a better job of trying to win football games. I am not the level of, and you know this, Bob, I'm not the level of Jerry Hader as some people. I think From a business standpoint, he's probably the best that's ever done it. From a football standpoint, he's needed to step back a long time ago. He did to a small degree with the draft, and they have drafted incredibly well. The dude has never handled contracts well, though, and he continues to do that. And now they find themselves in this mess, and he's obviously defensive about it. It's wild. And he doesn't, honestly, I would say, normally he's very, it's part of what's probably made him really good in business. He deflects that stuff and handles it well, but he's clearly sick of it, and he's clearly frustrated. And he should be, but he absolutely needs to look in the mirror first at the reason the Cowboys have these problems. Like, I get it. It would be hard to make a change from Mike McCarthy after he wins 10, 11, 12 games a year, but it clearly wasn't working. It would be hard to move on from Dak Prescott. And I'm not even totally convinced that's the right thing. I probably wish they would have. But you at least have to do something to help him, right? Like, all of these things, they're all self-inflicted. They're all self-inflicted. And for him to get defensive is pretty funny. And good. And I hope that those hosts didn't back down, and I doubt they did. And from what I know, he generally has a good relationship with all those people anyway, so it's probably not that big a deal, and it'll be water under the bridge at some point. But yeah, he's feeling it. He's hearing it. And it bubbles over. And if I was 82 years old and cranky, I might get a little defensive too, I guess. But it's his own fault.
I think that everything that is plaguing and ailing the Cowboys right now, it's all encapsulated in the tweet that the Cowboys sent out during the game on Sunday, showing the attendance at over 93,000 inside AT&T Stadium with the scoreboard blurred out. That encapsulates everything. I mentioned this going all the way back to training camp when Jerry went off on a tangent, you know, about how great he is and how great he, all the decisions that he's made and, you know, how everything is really good. And I'm like, you know what, at this point, Cowboys fans, the joke is on you, because you guys continue to pay for the tickets. You guys continue to show up. You continue to support a team where the owner and the de facto general manager is doing nothing to make the team better. But yet you're still showing up in droves because you love the team. And I get that. I understand being a fan of a team. I'm not saying you shouldn't be a fan, but you're supporting it with your money. It's expensive to go to an NFL game these days, much less season tickets to a franchise like the Cowboys. Fans are continuing to show up. They're selling out season tickets. They're bringing in 93,000 fans to a mediocre team that's doing nothing to improve. And so it's like, let's celebrate the people that are there while we're getting our asses handed to us week in and week out. So I get the frustration for sure. And I think that it's being directed at the right person. Honestly, Mike McCarthy's not the answer. Dak Prescott's not the answer. We all know that. But this should be 1,000% directed on the shoulders of Jerry Jones, because the buck stops with him. And I've got no issue with the questions that were being asked of him.
Yeah, I don't either. And look, it is all about Super Bowls, because the Cowboys have been a successful franchise as these things go. I look at the last, I just pulled up real quick off the top of my head, the last 20 years, the most regular season, and you know, don't laugh at regular season wins, but the most regular season wins, because what my point is, it could be there are far worse franchises as far as winning goes. The Cowboys are eighth on that list. The Chiefs are there. If you went through and looked at how many teams have won Super Bowls in that same time, you know, most of these teams have like one over that stretch. The Colts are in there. I don't know if it's been that long since they got theirs. I mean, you look at it, and there's a lot of teams, but in the NFL, we know that it's about Super Bowls. But there are also, like, I mean, the Cowboys consistently win, just not win enough, and we know that that's the case in the NFL, right? You're always judged about Super Bowls. Well, would we say that Buffalo hasn't been on a successful run? No, they haven't gotten the Super Bowl win. But yeah, this has been an insanely successful run in their franchise's history. So, you know, Cowboys fans show up because they're almost never awful. Like, they're almost never really bad. And so that's what keeps fans away.
They're
right?
Just it's usually like, I'm mediocre, not, you know. So
well,
like
mediocre.
That's,
I mean, yeah. they've make
that's
the,
a
they
step
make
up
the
from
playoffs
the basement,
almost,
I guess.
They make the playoffs almost every year. That's better than the basement. It is. I mean, I don't know how many times I'd have to look all this up. But that's, I mean, fans come back because the team's usually competitive. They're just not good enough. And it almost makes it more frustrating. If they were terrible, if they were the Browns, if they were whatever, it'd be way easier to be like, ah, I'm out. Like, I'm washing my hands of that. But they're always just good enough. Right. And that's almost like Dak is like a microcosm of that. He's always just good enough to win a bunch of games and pile up stats and then fall flat in the playoffs. And that's where it gets so frustrating, I think, for fans and radio hosts in Dallas when you see an offseason like this and you just run that back. Right. That's the frustrating part. Yeah, we know the Cowboys are probably going to win more than half their games this year with this run back, but that's not going to be good enough to win a Super Bowl. And if there's not this perception that you're not doing everything you can to win the Super Bowl, that's where you get these frustrations boiling over like this. And this was an embarrassing offseason for Dallas. Embarrassing. Like, they did nothing to make themselves better outside of the draft. And we knew that they weren't going to be good enough without changes anyway. They didn't change anything. This is what you get. And this is why people get so frustrated with Jerry. He stepped back from the draft. They're one of the best drafting teams in football. If he would just step back and let somebody handle these contracts, give himself a Brett Veach. I mean, it's with the resources they have, it could be so good, and it's just not. And that's why it gets so frustrating. And it's pretty funny to hear that contention because, you know, most of the time people are eating out of the palm of his hand. Not right now. They're not. Like, he is. And it clearly is that way. We can touch back on this again in the second hour. Maybe we'll play that audio for you again. And joining us now is Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman. The season is over for the Royals. Glad to be here with you, Mike, as we come back here. It was a disappointing end, a little bittersweet as you see the start of the ALCS last night. But enough time now where I think it's fine to look back appropriately and think about how remarkable the turnaround was. But I think the big fear, Mike, is that, well, what if that was just a one-off? I don't think that it is. We got a postmortem yesterday from J.J. Piccolo and Quatrero and everybody. What is the general vibe, do you think, right now? Is there anybody that matters that doesn't think they ought to be right back here again next year?
Well, if there's anybody out there that feels that way, I haven't run across them yet. And that goes from just the casual fans to those of us who follow these guys pretty closely, you know, on a daily basis. You know, once you do the kind of thing that they did this season, refine the roster a little bit, nothing huge and drastic, and you're right back where you were, if not a little higher.
I agree. I guess let's start with, we'll get to a couple of things. At one question, and I don't know if this was asked yesterday, Waka is on a player option, right? So he could walk if he chooses. His will be interesting. He essentially put up the exact same numbers he's been putting up for the last couple of years. When I look at it in his contract, I feel like he could get more than that on the open market. What do you think his chances of coming back and not exercising his option are?
Well, it's really, I think, a couple of questions. I think that he's going to decline his option. If I were him, I would. You know, he's coming back. If he exercises the option, he's going to get a little over $16 million. He had a good season. He's probably worth more than that on the open market. How much is the question? It's pretty clear the Royals want him back. And I suspect that they'll do what they rarely do. I suspect they're going to give him a qualifying offer. And that qualifying offer is estimated to be a little over $21 million this year.
Okay. So then he would get a raise through the qualifying offer. So they have to get – explain to us all – and what we're talking through here is Michael Walker has what would be a player option in his contract. There's a player option and a team option for – folks out there that don't really care about this stuff most of the time. A team option would give the Royals a chance to bring him back for his contract. A player option means he can turn it down. So your estimation is that he would turn that down, which is at what, $14 million? He turns that down, and then the Royals turn around, and they'd have to make him a qualifying offer in order to get draft pick compensation for him. Teams don't always do that, but they would at 21. And then at 21, he'd probably take it, wouldn't he? Or would he want a longer contract than that?
Well, you know, I think if he really wants to come back, and there's a lot of speculation in the press that he does, I think what you'd see if he indeed comes back is for something more than the qualifying offer. I think he would want 2 or 3 years guaranteed. What the you know, annual average value of that is, who knows? But yeah, I don't see the Royals or him being particularly interested in him taking a qualifying offer and staying for 1 year, and then let's go through this again next year. Because once he gets that qualifying offer, he can never get another one. That's off the table.
Whoa. From the Royals or from anyone?
Yeah, players can only receive a qualifying offer once, whether they take it or not. And, you know, if he goes to San Francisco, they can't give him one.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So we'll watch him, because he would be a big part of it. I mean, I think a part of the strength, Mike, for them moving forward is if Waka comes back, to me, their rotation's set. I don't think they need to do anything in the rotation. I guess they can make a decision with Michael Lorenzen and trying to bring him back. But they've got Marsh to be their fifth starter again. Unless there's a discount starter like they got with Lugo and Waka again, then they're good in the rotation a little bit. They, you know, they still have Lynch, that they all of these things. It becomes to me more about the offense that they can then target in on. And I've said this all along since the trade deadline. The beauty of this thing for the Royals is what they need is probably the most affordable thing they can find in the open market, which is a veteran bat. Those guys always feel like they come at discounts by, you know, at the end, toward the end of free agency. The top end seems super heavy, and then it feels like there's discount bats every year all the way through.
Yeah, I agree. I think that what Pecola is going to do is put the emphasis this year on bats, whereas, you know, last winter it was on pitching. But I think the first thing he'll do is try to get Waka figured out. And I don't think that's going to last long.
Yeah.
Now, that'll have to last till at least the World Series is over, because nobody can sign anybody until then. And, you know, Waka has 5 days to exercise his option after the World Series ends. And the Royals have 5 days to make a qualifying offer. So it's kind of a squeeze. But if they can get him lined up and signed, then I think Pecola is going to shift immediately to bats. You know, there's a lot of big ones on the market, and like you say, there's some cheaper options.
Michael Espekingsa-Kaufman joining us here to go through what the Royals talked about yesterday, and it's just good timing in general to look ahead. The other thing I think that is advantageous for the Royals now, and I guess we don't know how real it is, but Harvey comes back, who was their most expensive acquisition at the deadline. And I think you probably feel good about the bullpen. I mean, at this point, I think they'd be crazy to move Bubich out of his role that he thrived in down the stretch. You know, Ursic can handle being a closer. You have Harvey coming in. That gives you your back end. And there's enough arms there to fill out the middle. Now, it's not even do you have to go after any starting pitch. You don't have to go after any bullpen arms. That, again, makes it far more likely to me that they can go get impact, one or two impact bats.
Yeah, I think that's true. I look for them to look for maybe one more reliever, you know, not a lockdown big dollar guy, but somebody to just add a little more good feeling in the middle, toward the back end right there. It's, you know, it's not going to be, they're not going to bring Will Smith or somebody like that back. But yeah, I think you're spot on. Waka, maybe one reliever that doesn't break the bank, and then let's go get a bat or two and pay some money for it, or you know, do it in trade.
It's not expensive. The bat, how much more expensive can a bat be? I guess before we get into the specifics of it, what kind of budget do you think? And I know they addressed this yesterday. How much money does Pecola have to go after a bat or two bats?
Well, right off the bat, and I'm trying to remember specifically, you know, part of Ryan O'Hearn's Hunter Dozier's contract is still on the books. It comes off at the end of this season.
Okay.
And there's another one in there. I can't remember who it is, but that's $20 million right there. And $20 million can get you a player
Oh yeah,
you know, a good bat. And I think just listening to what Pecola said yesterday, I think, you know, that's $20 million that John Sherman doesn't look at as, oh, look, I've got to spend this money. He's already spending it. And I think he's going to give Pecola some more money. You know, he really wants that stadium. And one way to get people on board is get them excited. So, yeah, I look for a bigger bat.
Yeah, we probably don't say it enough. Sherman deserves a ton of credit. We all, or at least we did, gave him grief for trying to sell people on this last week without putting his money where his mouth was. He did. They're back in the playoffs. Here we go again. So then we get into the specifics of it. It was interesting. We had pondered and wondered and challenged why not Bobby Witt Jr. in the leadoff spot for most of the first half of the season. And then we had J.J. Pecola here, and he basically told us Bobby Witt Jr. doesn't want to do that. And that was it. Like, that was the light bulb moment. Oh, okay. Well, that's why they're not going to do it. Bobby Witt Jr. doesn't want to do it. And that's a perfectly good reason. So if not him, they got to go find one. And they said that yesterday. That becomes a priority, to go find their leadoff hitter. I think, again, with $20 million, you can do that. I haven't looked at the free agent market. I don't know if you have, but I would imagine that becomes priority one, a leadoff hitting outfield bat, right? Like, it has to be. It's the biggest need to me.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I was just looking at the free agent market yesterday, and I still haven't found somebody who I would just say, oh, yeah, give this guy a lot of money and bring him in to hit leadoff. I think they'll find somebody they're comfortable with, perhaps somebody who's never done that before. But yeah, if they could get a leadoff hitter who's an outfielder, that takes care of two things they need with one signing or one trade. So I think that's a top level idea.
And yeah, there are some guys that are Juan Soto, Anthony Santander is a free agent. Like, there are some big ones, but I think as it goes outward, we'll see them have an opportunity to do that. So if it's not, you know, how many bats would you like to see? How many different players, let me put it this way, in the starting lineup do you think this team needs to have? Ken on YouTube asks us now if Massey is a good candidate for leading off. I think Massey, to me, Ken, would be a good candidate to play second base, but I don't love him as the team's leadoff hitter. He was maybe the best of what they had this year, but it wasn't like a great leadoff. You need somebody that can get on base for those bats, and they just didn't have anybody getting on base that wasn't Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, or Salvi. So how many different guys do you think will be in that lineup next year versus what we saw this year? Massey's probably earned a chance to play next year, don't you think?
Oh yeah, Massey's set at second. I there's a lot of fan discontent about Garcia at third. I think if they don't trade him, and I don't look for them to, I think he'll be at third opening day. Melendez is, you know, it's hard to figure MJ Melendez out, but what you can tell listening to the Royals all season is he's not going anywhere. They want to develop him. They're encouraged by his defensive improvement the last two seasons, and they really feel that they can get his bat going. Renfro will probably be back simply because he has a player option and he'd be crazy not to exercise it. But I don't foresee him starting in right. I think somebody else will be in right field. Other than that, I look for the lineup to be pretty much the way it is, at least going into spring training.
Yeah, I mean, is that enough in the lineup? I mean, I know Vinny Pasquantino got hurt, and had he not got hurt, this would have been a top half offensive lineup in the league. It would have been. But it feels like it's not quite enough. And that doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's just a feel. Like, it felt like it needed more because it was so streaky, maybe, as much as anything.
Yeah, I think it does need more. But what I keep hearing and what, you know, Pecola kind of confirmed yesterday is that they're happy or at least satisfied with the players they've got right now. Now, that doesn't mean that if somebody gives him a good trade deal for a third baseman, that that Garcia is not going to become a utility player, which I think he'd be good at. I don't look for him to sign Alex Bregman. I think they won't spend that money. But I agree with you. It doesn't quite feel like this is the best they can do, but they seem pretty committed to it.
Yeah. I mean, it was good, and I think it's going to get better, and we'll see. There's a long off season ahead, Mike. We appreciate your insights here. We'll bring you back in as we make our way through it and see what you're hearing about who might be there and all the different things happening. I guess we'll try to enjoy the rest of the playoffs, but I think for people that follow this team and love this team, it's the countdown to April begins like right now. It is the buzz is back.
Yeah, I agree.
Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, their work will continue all through the offseason. We'll follow it. We'll get Mike back in here to help us navigate it. Mike, we appreciate it.
Glad to be with you as always. Thanks.
All right, there goes Mike Gillespie. We're going to take another quick break. When we return, we will come back with Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, to look ahead to one of the premier games of the NFL week, one of the premier games of the NFL season. And then we'll get into hour number two. We'll give you some HTO. We have all kinds of good stuff coming for you in hour number two. A lot of college basketball talk we haven't even had a chance to get to that we need to get to as well. Want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on Sports Daily and all across KFH. Here comes a break. On the other side, it's Dan Israel. We'll talk some Chiefs next.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Hour number two here of Sports Daily. It's Jacob Albrecht and Dan Israel. Tommy will be back in just a little bit. Dan joins us, our Chiefs insider here, as we get ready for what should be one of the premier games of the week in the NFL, Chiefs 49ers. We got all kinds of good stuff coming up for you here in hour number two. The IHOP hotline, 869-1240, will be back open in just a few minutes. You can celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP House faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. But we're talking Chiefs now. I say we're talking Chiefs, Dan. I got to get your take on a couple of things that the NFL okay. Throwing haymakers this morning.
League meetings are always fun, aren't they?
Yeah. So we get... Last night we watched the Raiders, and this does pertain to the Chiefs just a little bit, I think. I thought that was by far the best the Jets' best offensive game. As sloppy as it was, it at least looked like it had some life. And then We get the breaking news this morning that they bring Devontae Adams in. I don't know if it's too late for them because I know their schedule is very difficult. But that Jets offense, minus Nathaniel Hackett, I guess, and plus Devontae Adams, becomes a pretty dangerous offense, I think.
I agree. I'll give you one word, and it's got to be eliminated from their vocabulary, and that's doink. They can't keep missing field goals. You know, I mean, You look at what the Chiefs have done over these last five games without the successful efforts of Harrison Butker, it would be a very different record. And I just think, you know, for the Jets anyway, those were makeable kicks and they didn't make them. And you're not going to go deep in the postseason without that. It's just all there is to it. Defenses are too good, but I do think the addition of Devontae Adams in combination with Aaron Rodgers, man, that's scary just by itself.
It's scary. The other thing is the other news that's made its way through is Jerry Jones is getting feisty with some local hosts there in Dallas. Which is interesting, and he's kind of on the attack saying that's not their job. Of course, that's their job. You and I know that. We're exactly. In this world to ask hard questions. It just is a constant reminder. Somebody who, you know, grew up a Cowboys fan and still tries a Cowboys fan away from the air a little bit, even though it's hard. I say this all the time to Chiefs fans. So blessed to have the synergy between ownership and general manager and head coach that they have. Outside of the Patrick Mahomes and Kelsey dynamic is probably the most impressive thing about this current dynasty run the Chiefs are on. It can like you just you can't take that for granted how synergetic that front office is.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people in their own jobs, Jacob, have, you know, they've been through a situation where there's high drama and there's 10 in the office, whatever reason, one person along with another person. And that's very common. It's, in fact, is probably more common today than the opposite. And I think when, you know, I look back at my 36 years in this organization, there have been great times and there have been low times. And right now, there is no drama there. Everybody's on the same page, pulling the rope the same direction, and whatever cliches and, you know, monarchy you want to label it, it's phenomenal. And I'll be honest with you, I know part of that starts at the top with Andy Reid, and the top on the business side with Mark Donovan, and overall the top of the organization with Clark Hunt and the Hunt family. But, you know, I've worked in a lot of places, and sometimes even when the top leadership sets that precedent, it still doesn't permeate its way all the way down to the guy who's painting the lines on the field. And so it really is truly a blessing. And you can look at some of these organizations who've just been perennially bad. I mean, my goodness, the Panthers, you know, I mean, just seem like they struggle no matter what. And, you know, I think the Jets of lately, you have to question Woody Johnson's efforts because they just don't seem to be effective. Now, this may be a turn for them. It looks like it. But, you know, you just don't know. And you don't know the inside dynamics there. Does that make everything sunshine and roses? Probably not.
No. And I think you've got, it's interesting you bring up Woody Johnson, Jerry Jones, like they've done this so differently. Woody Johnson could see the writing on the wall and made the change in week five. Jerry Jones should have been able to see the writing on the wall for the last 3 years and cannot.
Yeah.
And you know, they're in about the same place. So maybe it doesn't matter. Chiefs Niners this week, Dan, it's a Super Bowl rematch. You know, these two teams have grown into a little rivalry. I think for sure. I think it's interesting that San Francisco is favored at home with their injuries over the Chiefs, who have their injuries. And here we go. These are not the two teams we thought we'd see in this game in week seven, but they're two teams that are, you know, in a pretty good position this year. The Chiefs certainly better than the Niners. I love it. I think this is still a fascinating game, even with all the different star players we won't see that we thought we would.
Yeah, I agree completely with you. I feel like these are two teams that know how to play that championship caliber football. Doesn't always mean either team executes it that way, but they at least know what that's like. They've been there on that stage. So I think the fact that there's so much history with the two Super Bowls and on this, certainly for the, you know, San Francisco 49ers, this is a game that they have to mentally win for them to, if they lose this in a regular season, to me, that feels a little bit, look, there's no must win games in week five, but, or what are we, week seven. But I feel like for them, if they lose to us again, there's going to be, you know, just this preponderance of evidence that they're just not good enough to get over the hump. Now, could be wrong, but I feel like this is way more important for the 49ers probably than the Chiefs. But nonetheless, big rivalry in my opinion. You know, it's a postseason rivalry, not a regular season rivalry, but rivalry nonetheless.
I agree. I do think there's clearly more on the line for San Francisco. But bad news for them, I think this is a really bad matchup for them right now. I think that when you look at what's going to make them really good, and it's all those weapons they have in the pass game, you got to run the ball, and they don't have Christian McCaffrey. Now, Mason's been good. I'm not taking anything away from him, but it sort of feels like they do well what the Chiefs stop well. And I think, you know, just on paper, this feels like a matchup advantage for the Chiefs.
Well, and I feel like, you know, in particular, I just think Christian McCaffrey he's a deal breaker. You know, he's a game maker. And so you take a guy of that caliber out, that's the equivalent of taking a Travis Kelce plus out for us. I mean, you know, that our offense would be different. And so their offense is different. And as much as they try to patch that, I don't see how you overcome the loss of a guy like that. Plus they're a little banged up, you know, in other areas as well. But, you know, I think one of the things that characterizes these two teams is their ability to kind of reinvent themselves on a continual basis. Yep. And so I'm actually excited to see how they adjust. I saw the one game that, you know, they played this week and it was very good, and it was against an okay team, but it was against a good team. Right. But the Chiefs are right now defensively, I think, playing very well. And so it's not going to be easy for them. They're going to have to not only come out and play good offense against a good defense, they're going to have to somehow defend the Chiefs, because the Chiefs are a tick away from scoring 30 and 35 points versus 20 and 24 points. So I feel like it's going to be a fascinating watch to watch these two coaches kind of how they and look, if you're Shanahan, you know, at some point, don't you just got to pull every last hair out? I mean, it just feels like, for crying out loud, you know, what do you got to do?
Totally. I mean, it's you're snake bitten a little bit, but they're going to have a lot of players, I think, in this game, right? Like they're going to have some players back. They have been pretty good against the pass. They have been better against the run. So if you're the Chiefs offensively, all the injuries, all the things, you know, they've had extra time to prepare for this too, by the way.
Yeah, that's true.
You've had, you know, extra time to create some trick stuff. The 49ers have been better against the run than against the pass. And I would bet you a dollar today that the Chiefs attack it that way. I bet they attack this game through the air.
Yeah, I think so too. And I feel like, you know, that would be kind of a good change up too for what the Chiefs have run the past 5 weeks. And we all know what Andy's record on the bye is. I mean, that's, you know, the more time you give that man, the more creative it's going to be, the more. Now, the one trick with that is that if you apply all your effort towards that creativity and that creativity doesn't work like you thought it did, you've got to revert. But I think one of the things that's been amazing about watching Andy Reid's career, especially over the last 12 years, because when he got here, remember, it was nothing but can't manage the clock. And they have done such a fascinating job over the last few years of managing the clock. They get into the second half and I feel like they don't make any really bad decisions. You know, that's unusual. I mean, I know he's got a lot of experience. He's the fourth most winning coach in the history of this league, and he deserves all the accolades he gets. But I think it's a real, that in particular is a real facet that you can point to and say, Andy Reid is not just Andy Reid. He continues to evolve and get better. And the coaching staff that he's put in place, you know, last week when they, or 2 weeks ago when they challenged the, I think it was a line of gain or a first down, and the all the mechanics that are involved in that, should they challenge, then the challenge and what they do during the challenge, they're never kind of, you know, running around like chickens with their heads cut off. They always seem to be under, you know, a process. And I just love watching it.
It's been, I've tried to look at San Francisco defensively, and it's been a little strange. Teams have attacked them differently. You know, lately teams have been attacking them with tight ends the last couple of weeks. Before that, it was very much with wide receivers. They've been more susceptible to that thing. We saw in that most recent game for the Chiefs what we thought we'd see early. And again, I called that at the time one of the best individual offensive game coaching performances I've ever seen. The way they attacked with the tight ends in one half and then attacked with wide receivers in the second half. I don't know if you've been able to surmise if that was by design or just sort of not accidentally, but if it's what the other defense was giving them. But don't you think that's something the Chiefs can carry forward now, just to focus on different things at different times within a game?
I do, and I think it was by design. And the reason I'll tell you that is because they activated four tight ends, right? They brought up Fortson and made him active. Why would you activate four tight ends right when you don't know yet what they're going to, what, how they're going to defend you? So I do think it was by design. And I do think that is, you know, this is again the example of creativity that we see out of our, you know, offensive coordination, is that they're doing things that are different. And that, you know, how many times could we say 14 personnel? 14 personnel meaning one running back and four tight ends. How many times can you say you've seen that in the last 20 years? I mean, it's happened, I'm sure, but it's certainly not a regular thing. And I think, you know, what we saw them doing with three tight ends in the past few years, that was so fun with the tight end screens, and it just gets better when you add the fourth tight end. You know, now you could do things on both sides. You could do things on one side and still have blocking on the other side. There's a lot of change up that can occur there. And so I think that would be good because it's not something that defenses are used to defending. And when it comes to, you know, football, National Football League anyway, we've always said if you can make a defense think, you've beaten them.
And if you make them think, you think about what are they – because the halftime thing was switching over to the receivers. Is Juju capable of carrying that Rushy Rice role the rest of the regular season? Because he did, he did it well, but, man, he was wide open and running free in that last game. Is he capable of doing that consistently?
That is such a great question, man. I want to say he is. I really do because he's not that old. I think he's 29 maybe. I just want it so bad, you know, and I want it for him. I want it for the team. And the fact that he looked like he flashed like he could do it last week makes me want to say, yeah, he can do it. But I do think one of the things that would have been even the case for Rashi Rice is you have to do it week after week. You can't just show up every fourth or fifth game. You know, I think that was something we saw with MVS. He would show up every six games and make a huge play. How was it? You know, you got six contributions out of a receiver for an entire season. That's not enough. He's got to find space. He's got to get open week after week. And I think the fuse is lit. So let's see what explodes when we get back out on that field, because now would be the time, man. The Chiefs really, truly need that. I didn't think McCole Hardman was that effective. Sky Moore, I guess, has at this point been relegated to special teams. And you know, so the guys that we've got in that room, those are the guys that are going to have to step up. Now, do I think the Chiefs might make a move here still? Yes, but I think they'll try. But I think still, to your question, is Juju that guy, or can Juju Smith-Schuster be that guy? I want to say, yeah, he can, but it really is about stacking that week after week.
If Davante Adams just set the market, Dan Israel, Chiefs Radio Network, joining us, then the Chiefs will probably make a move because <Yeah. laughs> that wasn't terribly expensive for the Jets. All right. So defensively, this has been an interesting – the first 2 weeks of the season, the Chiefs just got annihilated by tight ends. One team that uses tight ends effectively in the Ravens, one that almost never uses the tight ends in the Bengals. They got better against the Falcons, the Chargers, the Saints. Now they're facing a guy who's been sneaky good, and that's hard to say because he's been one of the better tight ends in football for a long time. But George Kittle's been really, really good. We know that he has a chip on the shoulder against the Chiefs. He said as much. He doesn't like them. This feels like a Kittle game to me. How careful do you think the Chiefs need to be defensively to make sure he doesn't do what tight ends did to them in the first 2 weeks?
I think you nailed it right on the head. The George Kittle, you know, I guess if you broke down tight ends in the National Football League, there'd be two types. There'd be blockers and there'd be guys like Kelce who block and go out and actually receive the ball and run routes. And Kittle is one of those. And Kittle is a smaller tight end in terms of weight, which makes him faster and harder to defend. When you ask a guy to chip for 3/4 of a second and then go out into a route, man, that is not a lot of time for a linebacker to cover a guy. And so I think he would be one of their weapons, and always has been, really. I mean, he's such an effective player and a veteran too. Let's not forget, this is a guy with a lot of experience. This isn't a guy who's just busting onto the seams and trying to figure out his role in an offense. This is a guy who's played there for years. And then you combine that with the fact that he's got two Super Bowls that the Chiefs have taken away from him. I think it's a big deal. And I think the Chiefs, I would surmise that Steve Spagnuolo sitting in his office and on his whiteboard, goal number one is probably stopping George Kittle, especially with Christian McCaffrey being out.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has to become the top priority until your corners, you know, can't stop everybody that they face like they have this year. It is the national window kick, late afternoon, no surprise. One of the games of the week. Man, it's a good NFL schedule this week. And this is one of them. Dan, what do you guys have special coming for us on the broadcast?
We're trying to get the entire crew for CBS to do a thing with this. It's looking like the scheduling may not work, but you know, it's funny when we go into all these buildings, it really is incumbent by how far we're spread apart, right? And it's amazing. Sometimes we can be in almost an entire football field spread apart. It's just that it confounds me. It's like who engineered this? What architect drew this up? But if we can get it together, we're going to have some special guests on Sunday for sure.
That'll be fun. You'll hear it, of course, over on KNSS, your home of Chiefs football. We love having it. We love having Dan, our Chiefs insider, in each and every week. Dan, be good. Enjoy the trip out to the West Coast.
We'll do it. Tell Tommy I missed him. Go Chiefs.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Israel joining us there. Always a pleasure. Such good insight there. I am fascinated by this matchup this year because neither one of these teams have what they thought they'd have when this schedule was made. And they're going to have to adjust. And this will be, this is one to me where I watch the coaching. Two of the best at it. How do they adjust? How do they attack? I really, you know, it's going to, on paper, it's obvious you start with Kittle. But what do the Niners do? Do they run the ball like they normally do, as good as the Chiefs have been, you know, at stopping that, at least the ground portion of it with running backs? It'll be fascinating. We'll have much, much more on that game throughout the week here on Sports Daily. All right, let's catch our breath here a little bit. We'll set up our giveaway for the second hour, some HTO, our text to win contest. Right now, you can win an opportunity to get a free iced tea, more than 25 flavors and thousands of combinations to choose from, sweet and unsweet, or some iced and hot coffee, I should say, and some iced and hot coffee. The new fall flavors, Dirty Chai Apple Crisp, buttermilk and pecan, all kinds of butter pecan mocha, I should say, all kinds of good stuff for you. All you got to do to win one of each is text us right now. The keyword is T-E-A. The short code to text it to is 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck there, everybody. All right. We've got some college basketball to talk about. We've got some of your commentary to get to. If you'd like to get back in touch with the program, the IHOP hotline is back open at 869-1240. You can leave us your voice messages on the Odyssey app, and we can take your video comments on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. Thanks for watching on 12 News Connected. It's Sports Daily. It's a Tuesday. I'm Jacob Albrecht. We'll be right back.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network.
Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrecht here with you on this Tuesday edition of the program. Our thanks to Mike Gillespie of Kings of Kaufman, a Royals insider, Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, for joining the program. And if you missed any of that, you can always go back and listen for free on the Odyssey app. It's easy. You go, you check it out, you listen to us. By the way, it's a great way to listen to the program if you got to hop out of the car or go do any of that sort of thing. We've got you covered. All right. So we have talked about a lot of things. We had breaking news off the top of the show. The Jets get Devontae Adams. Jerry Jones has gone nuclear a little bit on the local media tour that he typically does. And we haven't even had a chance to get to the college basketball news that's been coming in over the last few days. And here we go. You know, it's not surprising to see that we had Kansas at the top. I think most of us expected that. They had the most first place votes, I think more than half. Alabama's 2, UConn's 3. None of that's terribly surprising. It's what happens after that that I think should have us insanely excited for college basketball this upcoming season in our part of the world. It is remarkable, in fact, historic, how good the Big 12 Men's Basketball Conference is expected to be this year. Get this, right? We have a situation. We've never seen this before. Five of the top 10 teams in the top 25 are Big 12 teams. Now, this feels like the SEC in college football. Kansas is 1, Houston's 4. Iowa State's 5, Baylor's 8, Arizona's 10. Think about that. 5 of the top 10 teams in the country right now in the preseason poll reside in the top 10. After that, you go a while. Cincinnati's in at 20. And then you have a bunch of teams receiving votes that include Texas Tech, Kansas State, Brigham Young, BYU is. And all of these teams are in basically the top 40 or so, and we've never seen 5 teams from the same conference be inside a preseason top 25. That's what we have in the Big 12 this year. This is going to be wild. This is what it must feel like to be an SEC football team. It must, because Kansas is at top. We expected Kansas to be at the top. I don't know that I expected to see 5 teams in the top 10, Tommy. It's wild. Of course, I didn't expect it. We've never seen it before.
Yeah, I think it tells me, at least, you know, specifically with Kansas, just the kind of respect that program garners and Bill Self. Because, I mean, really, you take a look at it, and the Jayhawks, as we all know, didn't have a good year to their standards and expectations a season ago. They did bring in two additions to that team that I know are pretty highly regarded, players that could make a pretty big impact, but we don't know that yet. Like, there's a lot of unknowns about this particular team. We know Hunter Dickinson. We know DeJuan Harris. We know KJ Adams. We know them, but we don't know how it's going to work with the newcomers on the roster and how the rotations will play out and the minutes and how that's going to be distributed. And can guys like Zeke Mayo and Rylan Griffin, how big of impact players will they be? AJ Storr, will they be major impact players for Kansas this season? There's a lot of question marks with that specifically, which is why for me, it was a little bit surprising that they were the preseason number one. Not because I don't think that they're not because I don't think that they're talented, but because we just don't know. We don't know how it's all going to gel together.
But Don't we know more about them than anybody else? Like that's the thing for me. Like, yeah, they have their own amount of unknown, but there aren't teams across the country that can roll three guys back like Dickinson, Harris, and KJ Adams.
Yeah, but you don't think that we know more about, I don't know, the program that Dan Hurley has at UConn?
But than we do how many about of the Kansas? Same players does he have?
Well, I mean, I know that there are some returners, but I think that, I don't know, UConn maybe is a little bit more of a known quantity overall because of the level of success they've had the last couple of years. That would be the one other team that I would look at that I would say, just give them the benefit of the doubt that they're probably more than likely the number one team in the country going into this season.
Yeah, I would say it's Kansas because I think they have the best combination of things. I would also say it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Who cares? Kansas looked great on paper last year, too. A couple of things go sideways on them and it fell apart. I think this team is much more equipped to deal with some adversity. They're deeper. They'll have more options than they had a year ago. They're not going to be in a situation where they've got to force Nick Timberlake into a starting lineup when he's clearly not able to do that, right? Like that, those kinds of things I don't think are happening to this Kansas team like they did a year ago. But it's Houston, it's Iowa State, it's Baylor, it's Arizona. It's the fact that Cincinnati's in at 20. That snuck up on me. It's the fact that Tech and Kansas State and Arizona State and BYU all got votes to be in the top 25. This thing is going to be insanely good. I would really have to look. I'm not sure if any teams in the Big 12 are expected to be bad this year, Oklahoma State. But I'm not even sure about that. Like, it's going to be wild. It's going to be so much fun. And then there's the flip side of what we saw in that AP top 25, and that there are zero teams out of the AAC in the preseason top 25, which is concerning. Friday, after we left the air, Wichita State was picked fourth in the AAC, which honestly I thought was a piece of good news. I don't know that I expected them to be picked that high, but I like that. I think that's good news for the Shockers. But the problem is, Tommy, if you don't have anybody in the top 25 going into the year, the optics of that are really bad, and it does, I think, put the pressure on the AAC to have really good non-conference seasons, because inside the conference, at least based on what we're seeing in preseason predictions, there isn't much expected out of the league this year, and it's going to be hard to pad those resumes inside the conference. So, you know, I think Paul Mills said it yesterday, is projected 6 quad one and quad two games outside of the conference that they'll play. Those become really critical games right away. I mean, right away.
You've got to take advantage where you can and when you can. And if you're not given,
or you're going to have to win the league.
You're going to have to win the league. And, you know, if you're not given a ton of opportunities, which obviously based on the scheduling and based on all of that, you just aren't. And knowing that the conference itself is weak. And look, I mean, I think we can be real here. I think it's okay to be honest. The American is kind of a shell of its former self.
Sure.
From a basketball perspective, from a level of competition perspective. So it is what it is. You're not changing that anytime soon. And even if you wanted to, I'm not sure that you really could. So you've got to make the most of your opportunities outside of the conference when you can. And then I think obviously winning the league is going to be paramount too. If you can have both of those things happen, then you've given yourself multiple outs. You've given yourself multiple chances to potentially make the NCAA tournament. If all of a sudden your non-conference quad one and quad two games, as few and far between as they are, if they don't go your way, man, then your backs are up against the wall. The pressure is on. You have to win the league at that point. And so that makes it that much more difficult.
And it might be a one-team league. I mean, that might be what
it could
be.
It probably will be. I mean, I think that it probably will be.
It's hard to say. We know that UAB has a good program working out there. There are things I think that you can hope for, but you look at key games, and obviously Kansas State will be one of them. We assume, we hope, I guess, Northern Iowa and St. Louis are. You hope that Florida and Wake Forest can get you some sort of good game in the holiday tournament. But it adds an immense amount of pressure to those games, because there just may not be very many of them. May not be very many opportunities for the Shockers. Now, we look at it, too, and can Wichita State, who didn't get any first place votes but was picked fourth, can they be, and didn't have anybody on the all-conference first or second team, can they be good enough to win the league if it is a one-bid league? And I think that also becomes an area of focus when we look at it. And I would say, you know, if they get all of their eligibility stuff figured out, I would say, yes, I think they have a shot. I don't know that I would pick them to do it. But here's the problem with me for the American, Tommy. Like, it's hard to keep up with roster movement in the Big 12. I will be honest with you and tell you that I really don't know what any of these teams have done, right, as far as the transfer portal and any of that. I know what the Shockers have done, and they've had the most retention, which I think is good and helpful, but I don't know what anybody else has done. You can barely keep up with it, if you can at all, in the Big 12. I mean, I try to keep up with Kansas and Kansas State and Wichita State, and it's hard enough, right? Like, so these early polls and all of these things likely mean less than they ever have before.
Look at Kansas a year ago, the preseason number one. Like, I think that that's probably a little bit of why I've got some hesitation to really read too much into them being the preseason number one again this year, because they woefully underachieved based on that one preseason poll. They woefully underachieved during the course of the season. And I think that had you, and I'll admit, I didn't do probably the amount of due diligence that I should have leading into the season, because let's be fair. Like, there wasn't the depth on that team that they needed. And that was in place from the beginning. That was in place from the beginning. There were performers that I think the expectations were higher, and they probably should have been where they were, and they didn't perform. Like, Nick Timberlake comes to mind for sure. But then from there, you know, Kevin McCuller gets injured, and you don't really know what's going to happen with him long term. And he's there, and then he's not, and then he's back, and then he sets out a couple games. Like, it was back and forth. But despite all of that, the Jayhawks never had depth a year ago, and they were still picked to be the preseason number one.
And they would have. I mean, the Arterio Morris thing is what bit them in the butt 1,000% harder than anything. And that's self-inflicted.
1,000%.
That's not an excuse. That's self-inflicted. Don't bring a guy in with that kind of history and not take that risk. That's why I actually, like, it was very clear what they needed to do this offseason, and I think they did it. I think their depth is their
better.
Strength
the depth is going to be a lot better
this year. And I think Bill Self is going to rotate 8 to 9 guys, and they're going to use athleticism to strangle people and wear people down. You know, I love, and when we look at the top 10, by the way, when I say we don't know a whole lot, and we don't, and I'm not going to apologize for that. Like, if your full-time job is not to be a college basketball insider, I don't know how you could possibly even do it. I don't, like, we have got to see teams play. Like, gone are the days where we know much. I think the reason people default to Kansas is because they know those three guys, right? They know those three players, at least. They know Dickinson, and they know KJ Adams, and they know DeJuan Harris. So they're like, well, they got those three back. Those are, you know, guys that have been in the mix to be All-Americans. We'll start there, right? And they've also had a good class of, you know, impending transfer portal guys. I think that's where that starts, and then we'll have to let it all sort out. I don't care that they're preseason number one.
Is there anything
less
important than a preseason top 25 in college basketball? I would even suggest that a preseason football poll is more meaningful than the top 25 in college basketball.
Probably so. I'll bet you we're pretty close to it with that top 10. I'll bet you that top 10 isn't that much different by the end of the year. But after that, it's kind of a crapshoot. Like, think about the possible range of outcomes for Kansas State when we think about their season. Kansas State sneaky had this incredible. This is the most talented team Jerome Tang's walked in the door with, I think. Think about their range of outcomes. That's a team that could be in that top 10. That's a team that could, you know, be outside the top 40. And I think the Big 12 has a lot of those teams in it. And I don't think that's Kansas, and I don't think that's Houston, and probably not Iowa State, Baylor, or Arizona. It could basically be anybody else could fit that same description. And that's what's going to make the league so fun. We see inside the top 40, Tommy, 10 teams. If there are 10 teams inside the top 40 by the end of the year in this new Super League, does the Big 12 send 10 teams to the tournament?
I feel like we have this conversation every single year because there's always going
to
be...
But usually we're like, oh, they got to get 7 and maybe they should get 8 and then they get 6 or whatever. But you got to grow that number now with the growth of the league, don't
you? Sure, yeah. I mean, I think that it's if there's going to be any year where that's more likely than not, it's going to be this year just with the sheer depth in the league. And you're swapping out Texas and OU, which Texas has been... at least in the last couple of years, although there it's been a roller coaster from a coaching perspective, they've had a tremendous amount of talent. Oklahoma's been more fringe over the last couple of seasons. You're replacing those two schools with, you know, teams that like Arizona is absolutely a tournament team. BYU, it's going to be interesting with BYU because they don't have Mark Pope anymore. And how do they you know, come back from that? But, you know, they were a really good team a season ago as well. So I think that if there's any conference in America that can get double digits. I mean, of course, the ACC is going to be a team that you always look at, but the Big 12, for sure, I think has that
potential.
Well, the size
potential. Of it, right? Yeah. You grew to 16
Absolutely.
Teams, so it's just the size of it. But it also, like, they're going to beat up on each other for a long time, so, you know, they kind of need to dominate this non-con too. Tons of college basketball stuff. I mean, we're right there. Tell me, the Shockers play in 12 days.
Yeah.
Their exhibition. They play their exhibition in 12 days. Isn't late night like this Friday? Isn't that this Friday? It's either this Friday or next Friday.
I think it's this Friday.
Come on now. Like we're there. It's college. I blame the Royals for the distraction. It's a good distraction to have, but like we're on it. We are right there. Oh, cannot wait. Can't wait. Two stories that are circulating this morning. Davante Adams traded to the Jets. He and Aaron Rodgers are perfect for each other. Davante Adams demanded to be traded out of Green Bay. Now he's demanded to be traded out of the Raiders. So they're all in. I get it. I think it makes sense for the Jets, and I'm glad those two can meet back up and do whatever it is that they're going to do this year, because I think it'll make the league more entertaining. You could argue Jerry Jones makes the league more entertaining. I suppose he does with antics like this morning. He gets on to some local radio hosts for questioning his lack of offseason moves. We touched on this briefly, Tommy. I looked this up because I said I would. So the Cowboys, in since 1995 when they won that last Super Bowl, it hasn't been a lack of playoff appearances. It has not been. It's the fact that they have not won more than one game in a playoff in any of those years, and more often than that, they've won zero of their playoff games in those years. That's why Cowboys fans are frustrated, but they're getting to the play. Like I get why Jerry Jones makes all this money, because the team's always relevant and he does a good job away from football of keeping him relevant. But in relevancy, I don't know that Cowboy fans have ever been more fed up than they are right now.
I told Max this during the break that there's a part of me, I do feel sorry for Jerry Jones a little bit, because he knows that, you know, he's working against Father Time, you know, and he so desperately wants and needs another championship, you know, before he kicks the bucket, right? Like, it just kind of is what it is, unfortunately, but he is just incapable of getting out of the way. It's unfortunate, because there could be such a phenomenal brain trust with the resources that Jerry Jones has, a phenomenal brain trust to make the Cowboys a dynasty, like the likes of which we probably have never seen before, maybe outside of the Patriots and the Chiefs, right?
the one that he inherited, basically.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. He can't get out of his own way.
Those are some of the best teams we've ever seen. He didn't have anything to do with them, right? Those weren't his teams.
Right.
He was just getting started. But I would also tell you that, and I have a lot of 49er friends, and it's my easy go-to whenever they want to pile on and make fun of me for the Cowboys. And this is what I mean, is like, it feels worse than it probably has been. Cowboys have won a Super Bowl more recently than San Francisco 49ers have.
Yeah.
So like they have, but their own standard is so high, and that's Jerry Jones's due.
The Niners aren't America's team, right? Like
no,
the Cowboys are America's team.
Yep. That's Jerry Jones's doing. That's, you know, that's the standard he sets for himself. But by any other metric, if you took him out of the equation and the results were the exact same, we wouldn't have the same conversation. So it gives and it takes away, right? It gives in that they are the most valuable sports franchise on the planet. He deserves the credit for that. But it takes away in that it sets an expectation that if you can't reach it, things like this happen, and they can't reach it. And he had a bad offseason. He made mistakes. And if he gets called out for it, he deserves it because it was a bad offseason.
Yeah.
It's a terrible offseason.
And don't you think that like there's a trend, and it's been going on forever, where with that franchise, it is overpromising and underdelivering year in and year out. And it's not even, I don't even want to say like overpromising, like blatantly, like vocally right. saying we're going to win championships, but in the way that the team is always positioned. And a lot of it's marketing. A lot of it is, you know, look how valuable the franchise is and how popular the franchise is, but then it's constantly falling short year in and year out. It's overpromising and underdelivering, and it's that way every single season.
Yeah, and it is self-inflicted, and it's annoying. And it's annoying when you can see it coming from a mile away.
And by the way, when I say I feel sorry for Jerry Jones, like that's a small piece. Like the rest of it,
I get it.
Rest of it, I kind of makes me laugh a little bit because
it makes me laugh because I'm less invested emotionally in it now than I used to be. But I feel sorry for the fact that the best business side owner, like the best owner in the history of the business of the league and who has done great things for the league as a whole, can't get it done, and you can see it going up in flames in front of him. No, I get that.
He's not a football guy. As much as he wants to think he is, he's not. Correct. And that's been his Correct. Biggest downfall.
Always, always, always. He ran off Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Like, you can't do that. That story's out there. If you missed the audio, you can go back to our first hour and listen to it. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network today when we return on Sports Daily.
Crazy J's Furniture and Sleep Shop is...
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.